Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Jesse Harlan, and it is so much fun to have a chance to talk with you again.
Thanks. It's nice to be back.
And the game that we'll be talking about, your soundtrack for Yoku's Island Express, I've been having so much fun with this. It's not like anything else I've played. It's from a tiny, tiny studio, Villa Gorilla in Stockholm. And you've mentioned that this is one of your favorite soundtracks that you've ever worked on. Why is that?
Well, beyond that, it's one of my favorite games I've ever worked on. I just adore what they've made. For those who don't know about the game, they're calling it a Pinballvania, which sounds strange, but it's two very common genres of pinball and what's known as a Metroidvania. So if you're a well-versed gamer, you know the game Metroid, but Metroidvania itself is a genre sort of defined by 2D side-scrolling and the notion of backtracking through the level because certain areas unlock themselves based on abilities you gain, and you gain more and more abilities as you progress through the game. So that's a very common genre. Pinball is a very common genre. Pinballvania, very uncommon.
What I love about it is it's such a unique way to get through a game world, and it's never very frustrating. And actually, maybe I should back up and explain the story a little bit, because you play as this tiny beetle Yoku who's just arrived on this really fabulous looking tropical Mokumana Island, and he's supposed to take over as the new postman, but the island's god is trapped by a curse, and so he has to deliver letters to the island's three chiefs, which seems super simple, but there's problems and roadblocks and all kinds of things. And I've heard from the team that they said it was actually a 5-year process to get this game finished. And so I'm really curious about how you got brought in.
Yeah, one of the co-founders of Villa Gorilla is a guy named Jens Andersen. Jens and I worked together at LucasArts.
Oh.
There was a small team at LucasArts. It actually wasn't all that small now that I think about it. But back in around 2005, 2006, 2007, there were three different teams at LucasArts internally doing development. There was the Star Wars team, the Indiana Jones team, and then a team whose name was Team 3. Hmm. Team 3 was tasked with coming up with original IP. And we did so many different ideas, and very few of them ever saw the light of day. The special edition version of Monkey Island was the first thing that Team 3 did. Then a game came out, a small little game called Lucidity came out. That was all that the outside world ever saw of Team 3's work. But Team 3 had a whole bunch of different things going on, one of which was this game called Caveland, which was basically done before upper management then pulled the plug on it and Team 3.
Hmm.
Caveland was this really fun little game that the game's creative director, David Nottingham, who's now at Riot, talked with me about what he wanted the music to be, and we ended up going with Brazilian trip hop as the main genre for its music, which was a tremendous amount of fun to play around with.
Miso conta, miso voodoo, bete de conga.
Jens was one of the, I think he was a level designer or a programmer on Caveland. But he left shortly after the project was canceled. And he decided, you know, I'm tired of big studios. I'm going to go start my own little studio. And they put out a game called Colors 3D for the Nintendo DS. And then they started working on Yoku. And what I didn't know is that at the time, when they started prototyping it, Jens actually temped the game with my Caveland score.
Wow.
Yeah. So he came to me a number of years ago, maybe three, four years ago. And he said, hey, we've got this game. It's a mixture of pinball and a Metroidvania, and we've temped it with your Caveland score, and it works really well. We would love it if you could do the music for it. And no one has ever come to me before and said, hey, we've temped our game with your stuff. Can you come in and just do you?
Wow.
So that was pretty fascinating to begin with and felt very flattering too. And then when I said, yes, it sounds confusing, but it sounds fun. And then he said, just do whatever you want to do. That was then even more confusing and fun because it's I've been at this now for 20 years, basically. And in those 20 years, I've worked on dozens of games, and they almost always have a very specific direction that they're given, or they have a direction that they ask me to come up with, and I come up with a very specific direction for it. But it's rare that anybody just says, I don't know, just do whatever you want to do. Because now I have no direction, and now I don't know what to do. And not only that, but I had no direction, and they were asking me to, like, just be my own creative voice, which I've spent 20 years doing. Star Wars stuff and Marvel stuff and Futurama and all kinds of other things. And so when somebody says, what do you sound like? I don't know the answer to that very easily.
Yeah.
I at least had this fallback where they said, we like the Caveland score. So I knew I could go back and I could look at that. And I could start there. But then that wasn't going to work for the whole game. And I knew I had the... I mean, it's funny. The game is so weird. The game is... it is such a strange thing to mix pinball and a Metroidvania, but it works so beautifully. And so I knew that what I wanted to do was try and conceptually mix genres and mix things that didn't seem like they would go together at first, but then... you juxtapose them and suddenly it works. And that was going to be a big focus of how to make the music for the game too. I mean, I honestly, at one point I thought about going into my kitchen and recording my kitchen sink so that I could literally have everything in the kitchen sink in the score. 'Cause it got to where it felt like that at one point, that the kitchen sink was literally the only thing missing.
Yeah, you could have just, you know, tapped on it with some wooden spoons or something.
Yeah, exactly. I should have done that. I thought about it, but I never did it.
Well, you covered such a broad range of genres. I mean, there's the wonderful, happy, welcoming kind of Hawaiian main title music, and then it takes a real left turn down to the gorilla forest, and yeah. You've got a tango and some Indian sounding music, and then some really space kind of synthy type stuff. And so what were like some of the visual cues that you got from the areas that at least gave you a starting point for all these different styles?
Not very much, to be honest. It was mostly, we had this document where they would just explain to me what the area was going to be, and they would talk to me about what they wanted the emotion to be in a situation. But as far as what the visuals were, there wasn't a lot of concept art, because the art director for the game, a guy named Matthias, was painting the game inside the engine.
Wow.
And so, like, Linus, who's the level designer, would figure out what the design of each sort of section would be, and then Matthias would just go in and paint it there within the engine itself. So concept art didn't really exist in a lot of ways. So they would just explain to me what they thought it was all going to be. Or I would get some screenshots or some video capture, but it was frequently unfinished and sometimes barely started.
Wow.
So that's, I think, maybe in part why they said just do whatever you want, because we all just sort of knew we were winging it in many regards. They had very clear ideas of what it was all going to be. It just wasn't ready for me to look at, and it wasn't ever going to be finished in time for me to react to it after the fact. I had to do it at the same time that they were doing their work.
Wow. Well, there's one cue in particular, letting off steam, which is the one that kind of reminds me of a tango. And you do have to deal with actual steam in the game. And what I love about that cue is you've got a kind of a mechanical rhythm going on, and then you've got that wonderful distorted piano. I mean, it sounds kind of Cuban and just it's very cool. I'm picking up like an African kalimba in there.
Yep,
And
that's right. Yeah.
so what were some of the ideas that you had? I mean, obviously with a little bit that you had to go on, that made you think that that was going to be a really good fit.
Well, I got the first two tracks done for the game by looking at the stuff I did on Caveland. But then I knew I needed to come up with some sort of new approach because the game wasn't going to be Caveland 2, and I didn't want the score to just sound like Caveland. So I needed to come up with some sort of approach to what I was going to do. And I'm trying to figure out what is it that I sound like. And so I had this idea, and I decided, well, why don't I go back to my own roots? And why don't I go and see if I can just start pulling inspiration for this score from all of the different things that I listened to when I was growing up? What if I built this score as a snapshot of what made me want to be a composer in the first place?
Wow.
So it is a weird sounding score in the end, but it's full of a whole bunch of very specific influences that I can point to 90s hip hop, and I can point to progressive rock like Yes and Pink Floyd, and I can point to electronic music pioneers like Vangelis and Tangerine Dream, and I can point to trip hop stuff like Portishead and Sneaker Pimps and I put some chiptune type influences in from my old NES days in the 80s. And it's all in there. And like, particularly, you mentioned the Letting Off Steam track. I would say that in there is a definite influence from like Nine Inch Nails' The Downward Spiral.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I was like, oh, well, it's a whole level based on Steam. Why don't I riff off of that idea that they used, that Trent Reznor used, of using Steam as a snare sound? And then again, because it's all about juxtaposing two things that shouldn't really go together but do, it's Nine Inch Nails industrial sounds mixed with the piano that would accompany old silent films like the Keystone Cops. That was, I just, I was like, okay, I've got, it's a boss fight. It needs to feel tense, but it's sort of cartoony. It's not a terrifying scary. It just needs to be a sense of agitation and urgency. And why not use the Keystone Cops? I don't know why, but I just decided to use the Keystone Cops.
it all blends together so well. And that was another thing I wanted to ask you about, because moving through the world, there's no like set pace with a game right. where they set the tempo for the player's footsteps, let's say. Right. There isn't an in-game tempo for how you get around in the world. So how much did you take that into account as you were writing the music for the different areas?
It was definitely was something we had to account for. It ended up that the approach to scoring the game was a lot like an old Nintendo game. Again, this sort of concept of throwback to what I listened to when I was growing up, what made me be a composer. It's done in very much the same sort of way as an old NES game, where music is tied to particular locations, and when you move to a new location, the music changes, and if you go back, it changes back, and while you're there, it's just simple loops. We actually tried a lot more nuanced, interactive stuff earlier on in the development, and it just kind of didn't work. The dev team thought that the shifting interactive stuff was too subtle. When we attempted to prototype stuff that called itself out more in its changes, that didn't work either. It felt too disjointed. It was a thing where you had to make the music call attention to itself enough to that it would feel like kind of its own character in the game, but at the same time, it could function in the background and not drive people crazy if they're going to be sitting in one area for a long time.
Yeah, and that's absolutely the case, because I've been in the area with the Slug Gardener for quite a while now.
Yeah.
And yet the music never gets old. So
yeah.
How did you do that? Because it just,
luck?
I never get tired of listening to it.
I think it's luck. I must have done 8 different versions, I think, of the Slug Gardener track before I got the one that worked. I had this idea that slugs were going to be represented by Barry Saxophone. So I kept trying different takes on that, and it just never worked. And I wouldn't give up. And finally, eventually, I was like, okay, I got to give up. And I gave up and I tried an 8th version, and it was the final version that's in the game.
Thank you.
it was going to always be a score that was very production heavy, very nuanced, and yet at the same time had to be pretty chill and pretty relaxed. And I wanted it to be a modern take on the old NES style, which is that tracks would just loop for a long time, and tracks were very melody heavy, and the melodies had to be really strong, and the melodies had to like burn themselves into your brain in a way that didn't bother you, in a way that you enjoyed the melody and you would walk away from it and feel pleasantly happy when 6 hours later all of a sudden it starts playing in your head and it makes you feel like, oh, what a great little world. I wish I could go back to that. And then since I'm at my job or school or whatever, in the meantime, I'll just hum this little song from it that's stuck in my head.
Oh, that's so cool, because that's exactly how it works, and yeah. how it works in my head too right now. And so was that your sort of benchmark as you were writing the melodies, that if they were still in your head the next day, you knew that you had a winner?
Yeah, completely. Yep, yeah. That was it. And I even tested stuff on my son, almost like a guinea pig, where he'd come home from preschool or being at his grandma's house, and I would say, hey, buddy, come here, take a listen to what I'm working on. And I would play a song for him. And if by the end of about 45 seconds to a minute worth of listening to it, if he could already start humming it back, I knew I was on the right track.
Oh, that's cool. That's a cool focus group to have, too.
Oh,
wrangled some pretty amazing sounding musicians too. I mean, I'm kind of figuring a lot of those instruments were played by you, but who else did you work with on this?
There's a lot of stuff that's samples, but there is a lot of stuff that is live musicians. Honestly, the music credits for this game dwarf everybody else in the development of the game. I had 12 different singers that I worked with. I had a guy playing ocarina. I had a guy playing harmonica, two different trombone players, alto sax, tenor sax, banjo, ukulele, acoustic guitar, electric bass, fretless bass, and I'm not sure what else. And then I recorded a bunch of like hand percussion, like body percussion and clapping and snapping and that sort of stuff, and shakers and things myself.
Oh, speaking of body percussion, that was a thing that we talked about with your soundtrack for Mafia 3, because you used these very specific musicians. I think, were they in Tennessee?
That's right.
Yeah. And I love that you incorporated them. And then the blues too, Out Down and Underdark, is just, you know, it sounds almost like it could have been a track that didn't make it into Mafia 3. It's just so brilliant.
Yeah, that one, I started writing it, and just the way it started coming together, I started feeling like, oh, this almost sounds like one of my favorite old Pink Floyd albums, which is, I don't know, I mean, everybody, when they talk about Pink Floyd, everybody talks about Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall, but I adore an album from Pink Floyd called Momentary Lapse of Reason. And when I started working on this track, it felt like it had a kind of Momentary Lapse of Reason vibe to it, or something maybe even from like The Division Bell. And so I called up my brother, who is a lot of things. He's a documentary filmmaker, he's a recording engineer, he's a pop music producer, and he's a hell of a guitar player. I said, hey, I've got this track. Let me send you the backing track. It feels to me very Pink Floyd. What would you say to, you know, could you do your best David Gilmour over top of it? Hmm. And he took a listen to it, and he said he loved it. And he said, I'm going to give you two tracks. I'm going to give you one with my Stratocaster and another one with my Les Paul, and how those guitars are physically different influenced how he played. There is a difference in how he approached his improvisation, and it's specifically tied to the two different guitars that he used.
That is so cool. And I love how they sound, because now that you mentioned the whole Pink Floyd thing, I can totally hear that. And it just makes it seem like real and handcrafted, and you know, like it's very alive. It's as live as the world is, which is just so cool.
Yeah.
I have a soft spot for tube and throat singing, and it's hard to explain, but I saw this incredible ensemble, Hoon Hurtu, way, way back, and they were just so amazing. And ever since then, I just have so much admiration for the people who can do that throat singing, getting that harmonic extra note as they're singing. And so it was so cool that you used it too.
Yeah, this is a little indie game, and I would have loved to have been able to march out into the world and do a bunch of source recording and my own recordings of Tuvan throat singing, and then go ahead and incorporate that in. And unfortunately, that just wasn't going to be realistic for this game. So all the Tuvan throat singing stuff that's in here is just sample-based stuff that comes from the Omnisphere software instrument. So if you own Omnisphere and you want to toss on Yoku and play along, just go load up Omnisphere and you'll find all the Tuvan throat singing stuff in there. But I definitely wanted to have that stuff in there because part of the game is focused around these guys called the Space Monks. They're these frogs that live at the top of a mountain. The way that Villa Gorilla described it to me is that the monks have a religious-like reverence for science.
Wow.
Which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about them is this dichotomy of technological and natural. Everything about the space monks is that way. So they've built themselves a spaceship, but they've built it entirely out of wood. And I knew I needed to capture exactly that same thing with the music. So that's why the Space Monks track has some very, very organic sounds. The throat singing is part of it. It also has berimbau, which is a Brazilian instrument that when you bow a berimbau, it's got this really great, grainy metal scraping sound. Just feels very organic. But at the same time, this is the science track. So that whole track begins with Tuvan throat singing and what I wanted to have sound like a 1970s science class film strip, you know, the kind of thing
would
start playing. There'd be these like 70s type synths, and then you'd hear someone say, "Phosphorus." You know, what does it do for us? You know, that sort of thing. So that's what the track one was. It was about monks and 1970s educational film strips. And I was originally, I wanted to try and I was going to record myself singing like old medieval plainsong chants. But instead of having it be religious texts, it was going to be chemical formula. I tried making it work. I recorded a number of them of myself just going like, you know, disodium chloronate, you know, that sort of thing. It didn't work at all. And so I still wanted to have something like that in there. And instead, I came up with this idea of taking the DNA sequence of something and speaking it through a Frampton Comes Alive style vocoder and have that be in the background. So the very first thing I was able to find the DNA sequence of that just happened to be online. I can't remember how I certainly didn't go searching for yeast, but that's what came up. So, I forget what it was I was searching for. It might have been frogs. I might have been searching for frogs because these space monks are frogs. But for whatever reason, I couldn't find that. And the first thing I found was yeast. So I just took part of the DNA sequence of yeast, which is just, you know, like GCCTAGG, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I just spoke that through the vocoder. So in the background of that track, almost it almost functions sort of as a vocal, but it sort of functions as a percussion track in a sense. You'll just hear this vocoder going A G G C T C G G A G, you know. And because it's DNA and DNA is gigantic, I don't think it ever loops. I think it just keeps going. And
wow.
Yeah. And the closer you get to the Space Monks, the more technological stuff works its way into the music. It starts out with this track called Lost in the Frost Pines, and it's a lot more organic, a lot more acoustic instruments. And by the time you get to a track that's called Monk Stumpin', by the time you get there, that's where it's pretty heavy NES chiptune influence. And we've transitioned from the acoustic all the way to the very, very pure sine waves and triangle waves and whatnot in the score. Thank you.
Oh, that is just so cool. And what I'd love to find out about is, you know, clearly you had deadlines, I imagine, but it sounds like you had a lot of time to experiment too. So
I did.
Yeah. So did you ever get to the point where the deadline was looming and you just sort of had to pull the plug and say, okay, that's it, I've got to go with this? Or did you allow yourself enough time to just keep doing this sort of trial and error process?
This project was very nice in that regard, in that I had mostly trial and error and time to experiment. There weren't too many deadlines with it, other than I would talk to the developers and they would say, well, at some point within the next month, we're going to be taking it to PAX, or you know, we've got E3 coming up in 2017 and we're going to need some stuff. And so we would take whatever I had, and earlier on, they would just sort of fill it in with other stuff. But it was very kind of them, because when they filled in the game with other stuff, again, it was always stuff that I had already written from other games and things. So there was never a moment where anybody else's music was hanging out in the game. It was always mine, but maybe not from this specific game. So it was pretty cool to be able to just see what stuff was resonating with them of things that I had worked on in the past.
Yeah, I bet. Was there anything that you gave them that they ended up not using?
No. In fact, it was the opposite. There were a couple of times where we had reached a point where I was like, okay, guys, that's it. Everything's all done. And then I would do a playthrough of the game and say, you know what? I don't think we spec'd enough music for this part. I think I need to write more for you, because that just the way the gameplay works, the way that the level design is, you're spending a lot of time here, and to me, it's feeling like it'll get fatiguing. So we need to give you a little bit more to try and break that up. And so they used everything that I gave them.
Wow. So nose to tail then with.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, like I think I mentioned that we tried a bunch of different interactive stuff early on and it didn't quite pan out. Well, one of the things we did was, part of the way the game works is that there's exploration, but then sometimes you find yourself in these very traditional pinball table-ish areas and you can be there for a little while. And one thing we had talked about doing was that maybe the music would change whenever you got into one of those situations and the intensity would ramp up some. So I wrote this piece of music to try and be a ramped up intensity pinball table track. And when the whole idea of deeper interactivity fell away, they took that more intense track and they said, you know what, this track is great, and we think that it'll be perfect to use for our fast travel system, which is called the Beeline.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what to call it. Cheesy organ. I don't know what it is. I don't know what that genre is. But that track came from experimentation with interactivity.
And the other thing that I noticed is, you know, normally when you're playing on a physical pinball table, you hear the bumpers moving and there's a lot of like bells and little sounds like that. And the way that they did the sound design for this, it doesn't like overpower the music at all. It's very subtle. And so that's just really great sound design, I think, because it doesn't interfere with the music.
That is the brilliance of Tom Bible, the game's audio lead and sound designer. Tom and I have worked on a lot of stuff together for years, and he and I really enjoy getting music and sound design to work in lockstep with each other. He will ask me what keys I'm using and can we limit the keys so that he can tune his sound effects to the keys that I'm using. And we've experimented with those sorts of things in a lot of really interesting ways. Like, we've worked in past games where I was blurring the line between what is music and what is sound effects, and he was doing the same. In fact, on the main theme for Yoku, part of the percussion track is actually mechanical sounds from pinball tables.
Oh, wow.
But it's just all sort of layered in with everything else, so you wouldn't really know. And then Tom and I talked, and I tried to mostly restrict myself to C major and E flat minor so that his sound design could all be tuned and function tonally in the same way across the whole game.
I think more and more games are doing that now. It's really wonderful because then nothing stands out in a bad way and there's nothing jarring at all. It's just this one really fantastically cohesive sound, which is just really great.
Yeah.
Are there any other cues that you're especially proud of how they turned out?
The last cue in the game weird one.
in a good way though. Yeah,
it's weird in a good way. I mean, it's strange when it's all said and done. It is strange to have a score that includes a medieval round that itself then goes into like a sinister reggae track, and then that's followed up by really out bebop. But that sort of all came about because when I was doing the main theme of the game, there's a little interlude of trombone in like a B section. And I knew I wanted to have trombone in there, but I didn't want it to take itself too seriously. So the way I directed the trombone player was I said, I want this to sound like you're drunk. I want it to sound like a drunken trombone. So, you know, lots of sliding or that sort of thing. And so trombone player did a great job with it. I put it in the track. I set the track off. And Tom in particular, Tom was like, I don't know about that trombone. Like, why is it so sloppy? And I was like, I don't know. Why not? And it sort of bugged him. And so I said, all right, well, okay, but don't worry about the trombone. I'll bring in trombone later somewhere that bring the whole thing around and I'll make it work. Don't worry. Just trust me on it. And so then I had this like note I wrote down, which was like, figure out how to make the trombone work. So when it came time to do this track at the end, the boss fight is, I don't want to spoil it, but the boss fight, when we were talking about what is going to happen with the boss, there's like the island has this almost like Cthulhu-ish elder god issue that it's dealing with. But the elder god is not the end boss. The elder god is benevolent.
Right.
So the thing that you end up fighting at the end of the game had to be a lot more frantic and a lot more unhinged and crazy. And I didn't want to do frantic, unhinged, and crazy in a way that was just constantly dissonant and scary and like cinematic action approach, because it just didn't seem like that was the way to go for this project. So I think it was just a brainstorming thing. We had weekly phone calls, literally weekly for years, with Villa Gorilla. Every Thursday at midnight, Thursday morning.
Wow.
I called Sweden and we talked. And when we eventually got to where the call that we were talking about, the end music, I think I just said at one point, like, maybe I'll just do like a crazy jazz tune. And as with basically every suggestion I threw their way, I think they just said, yeah, okay, cool, whatever, whatever you want to do. So then I went and had to figure out how to do bebop, which I've never done before, and program the MIDI for what felt like a zillion bass notes and a zillion bongo notes and a zillion drum notes. And at that point, I was like, okay, there's just no way I'm going to do MIDI programming on the solo instruments. I'm going to hire some people to do this because it's just going to be, I will be 80 years old if I have to program all this stuff. I'm 80 years old before it's done if I'm programming all that stuff. So I hired three guys and I told them, just be like as out and crazy with it as you can. And I tried to like not direct them too much, because I wanted to just see what they would do with it. And it ended up being really, really awesome that way, because they each took that in a different way. They each took that direction differently. And two of the guys, I think, couldn't bring themselves to be quite as out as I was looking for. And one guy ran with it 100%.
Well, the end result is just so great because it really does sound like this sort of freewheeling jam session.
Yeah, and it was, but it like the nice thing is that the guys, they recorded their stuff at their places and sent me stems, and then I went through and just meticulously chopped everything up. So what you hear is actually not exactly what they sent me. There's a lot of editing in that. They each did the whole thing as solos, but I was then going to try and figure out how to make it sound like a jam session, like you said. So I kept finding little phrases of saxophone or little phrases of trombone where somebody might just do a little thing like ba da ba ba ba, and that was it as part of a, well, actually they were all doing it as solo, so it, they'd be playing along ba da ba 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 ba, and then keep playing. Well, I would take that little ba da ba ba isolated and turn the volume way down, repeat it a couple of times, and then make that as if they were just sort of comping in the background while somebody else was playing a wild solo over top of it. And I kept doing that. I kept finding, like, okay, here's a little trombone piece. Let's make this the comp for this part. Here's a little saxophone piece. We'll make him comp while the trombone melody is going. And I tried to just edit and chop and arrange this thing so that it felt like a bunch of guys playing together, even though it wasn't at all.
Thank you. Mocha heya, mocha heya, pita pura 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 ya.
It's amazing. I mean, it says a lot for your editing and mixing skills, for sure, because it doesn't sound like it was put together tiny piece by tiny piece at all. And it's such a great way to wrap up the soundtrack, of course, but obviously the game as well. And boy, Jesse, it's been so much fun to talk with you about this. I really, really appreciate your time. And congratulations on such an awesome soundtrack.
Thank you. And thanks for the chance to chat about it all, because I have done so many weird things with this score. It's nice to be able to talk about it all and say, you know, like, I remember recording the vocoder yeast DNA thing and thinking, like, man, this is nuts. And a year from now, I'm going to be talking about it somewhere. But at the moment, this is crazy, and I can't wait for that day where I can finally just sort of say, like, what the hell did I just do? And so here's that day.
Yep.
So thank you.
Today's the day.